Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 12th episode, yay, of the Fix Your Sex Podcast, where we talk all things sex. I am your host, Amina, and I'm a sex coach, tantric body worker, sacred sex worker, and all-around sexual revolutionary. And I'm here to share my thoughts and hot takes on how and why we are still having bad sex in the 21st century. And hopefully providing you with some solutions and tips for great sex for the rest of your lives. Quick disclaimer, obviously, this podcast is about sex. It's for grown-ups, and there are sensitive topics being discussed. So, if you are under 18, or if conversations about sex and the usage of profanity bother you, you might want to leave now. All right, now that we've gotten that out the way, let's get started with today's show. So, on today's show, I'm going to be talking about a few things. First, I'm going to be talking about the girl who cried healing. I'm going to talk a little bit about wound licking in love and also about Tantra in 2019 in Atlanta, in the U.S., in the Black community, just what it looks like where we're going. I cannot forget. We have a pro-ho tip. Today's pro-ho tip is brought to you by Atlanta Tantra Festival in Charlotte. The Atlanta Tantra Festival will be in Charlotte January 19th. It's a one-day event. If you haven't gotten your tickets yet, Charlotte people, folks from surrounding Carolinas, please do so. You can do so at atlantatantrafest.com. It's atltantrafest.com. Or you can do so by going to my website as well. That is the Atlanta Tantra Fest in Charlotte on January 19th. And today's pro-ho tip is get tested. We just wrapped up World AIDS Day, and December is always a month of remembrance for those who are living with HIV and or AIDS or who have died due to complications from the disease. It is important that you get tested. We know that. But also, here's the pro-ho tip part, is that condoms and lube are pricey. And so if you are trying to minimize your costs, don't forget that government resources are making condoms and lube available as a part of harm reduction at any HIV testing site. So go get tested. Snag your free condoms. Snag your free lube. Know your status. And make sure that you're staying safe and that you're keeping the community safe. Give yourself some peace of mind and get tested. That's your pro-ho tip for December. And again, it's brought to you by the ATL Tantra Fest in Charlotte. So, there we go. Let's get started with the show. So I want to first talk about the girl who cried healing. And many of you, I hope, anyway, are familiar with Aesop's fable about the boy who cried wolf. And I think that it's important to kind of like look at both stories as they relate to today. We have a village around us in social media. And the village is not unlike the village that the boy cried wolf to. And the boy is me. It's you. It's the boy, the girl, or the gender fluid person that's on social media, oftentimes speaking to their own personal healing path or desire for healing or need for healing. And you see this a lot more now because healing is trending. And I am so fucking happy that healing is trending after watching everything else trend that was not there to serve us, that didn't do any benefit to us, offer anything other than more trauma, really. So I like that healing is trending. I don't want to take away from that. But I just want to remind, the moral of the story was that he was doing it to amuse himself. He wasn't doing it because he needed help. And I feel like so many social media platforms offer us the opportunity to amuse ourselves with the desire for healing. And we're not really doing any of the work. We're not even really ready to do any of the work. And the story in Aesop's fable, it ended with no one believes a liar, even when he is telling the truth. And I think that really, I want folks to kind of internalize that, because you won't even believe yourself. You will stop believing your own truth because you are convincing yourself first and foremost of the lie so much. You can only lie to yourself for so long. Eventually, you'll have to ask yourself the tough questions, like, are you really even ready to heal? You can talk about all the healing that you want to do. You can go visit healers and, check in on social media and go to events. Come to my events. Go see my colleagues. Come see me. But are you really willing to change? Do you even believe that you deserve to heal? That you deserve to live in a better place? Are you addressing any of your blockages to healing? These are the tough questions that we have to ask ourselves when we actually start on the path. And I think that it's too often that we don't really want the healing. We want people to see us moving in a space where healing takes place, because that is the trend. So I hope that my hope for 2019 and for the future is that we see this healing trend and we embody it, that we don't just cry healing, that we start to address our blockages to healing. We start to see where we're resistant to start to get, some of the healing done. It's really easy for us to say, I want to, live a full expression of myself, but not to do any of the masturbation and meditation techniques that, that we practice when we're in class, just to go for it. That was a cool class. I went, I learned about this manifestation. I learned about all of these powers that I have. Great. I got the knowledge, and not to do any action. Coach Collier often talks about how we have a lot of sayers, a lot of talkers, not a lot of doers in the healing community. And I think that that's true, that we get a lot of people that can read all of the books. And let me tell you, there are a shit ton of books out, right? Like, there's no shortage. My Amazon cart runneth over. In fact, if you're listening and you want to send me over a gift, you can send me over some Amazon gift cards. And I know it's the big devil, but those used books that I get from folks that are selling on there, they speak to my soul right now. Anyway, I digress. So oftentimes trauma sends us to look for healing, right? We end up experiencing trauma, and it's not just this major trauma. It's not, a divorce or a really bad breakup or really grave sexual trauma, like rape or incest. That's not always how it shows up. Sometimes it shows up in just the way that we speak to ourselves, so that we've allowed ourselves to be spoken to around sex and sexuality, and how that's shaped our identity, and how that shaped how we interact with people in the world, how that shaped our inability to receive love or to offer love or to be in loving relationships. So it's not, I don't want you to just hear like, oh, trauma, and think that's not me, because it could not be your truth, some serious, grave form of trauma, but you still feel unfulfilled. And that's because it can be smaller. It's oftentimes the little micro tears and the micro traumas that we experience that create, this bulge, this issue that we have that we need to work through. So addressing those traumas can be challenging, but they often send us to look for healing, even when they're small traumas. We go out and we look for healing, and we find something that feels good for the moment, and we leave it, especially those of us here in the U.S., because we're so used to microwave healing and microwave success. We go to the chiropractor, we wait all year, we experience pain at about a 65% pain threshold, and then we cross over into severe ouch, and we go see a chiropractor and get our back adjusted, and we get an instant fix because we're right back to 70. That's not healing. It's the same thing that we do when we experience trauma sexually, or we experience, we realize that we're having the same guilt when we have sex, and we want, that's traumatic. We want to address that. So we go and we look for the sexual empowerment coaches. or a sex coach or some tantric healing. And we go and we have one session or we go to one workshop and we think, okay, I'm good. Or we read one book and then we post incessantly about all the healing that is taking place or that we, you know, that we're working on. And folks don't see the truth, because when you're healing, when you're truly doing the healing work, it changes everything about who you are. A lot of these imprints are up on us for a long period of time. So when you start to do the healing work, you don't even look as recognizable as you think you do to your friends and family anymore when it actually starts to take place. Something is so noticeably different that they can't quite put their finger on it, but it's a noticeable difference. Having a noticeable difference like that can be scary, right? It's challenging because what if they don't like me if I look different? And that's really what happens. We come to a space of fear. We cry healing. We get the attention that we want. And folks are waiting for us to turn the corner. They're waiting for the healing to take place. But we really don't let it take place because we're not ready. We're not ready to let go of the damaged person that we are, or the hurt. We're not fully ready to let that go because it's become so much of a part of us. The hurting is a part of who you are after a while. After not addressing, a flat foot, for instance, you the limp just becomes the way that you are. Your gait is not correct, but it just becomes who you are. You walk like that because you're flat-footed and because you did nothing to address the issue. And so when you start to change, when you start to walk more upright, you look different. And sometimes we internalize this fear that we're going to leave some people, or some people are going to leave us. They're not going to like the new us. And we stay there in this place, in this limbo, somewhere where we should, well, somewhere between know better and do better, right? Where you're just kind of hanging out there. Like, you know that you have work to do. You're aware of what the work looks like. You're just not doing it because you've brought attention to yourself and told everybody you're going to start doing it. And they're all waiting for you and they're all watching and they're cheering you on. But it's more comfortable if you stay where you're at so you can still hang out with them. Water seeks its own level. It's a good segue, or kind of, I guess both of these kind of come in together, because when I was talking about, when I talk about wound-licking lovers, like, that's really what it is, right? It's water seeks its own level. Either you're leveling up or you're leveling down. Don't you want to level up and have folks level up to you? I saw a post that said, be careful that the type you think you are attracted to is not actually your wound seeking out familiar ground. Like, that really, really hit me, you know, because I know I've been that person where I wasn't, I was a healer, in quotes. I had gone to massage school and completed all this time, and I had taken some classes, but I was still quite injured. I hadn't quite started doing any of the healing work to myself. In fact, for a long time after massage school, I wasn't even getting any touch done back to me. I was just putting it out there. I was connecting on that way. That was also the same time in life where I couldn't have heart-to-heart sex. The missionary position was really problematic for me. Even intimate grinding was problematic. I could do scissoring because I could be away. I could throw my genitals towards you, but that heart chakra was so congested and so unable to, like, breathe and move. There was no energy moving through. So I had I had some healing that needed to be done, but I wasn't focusing on it. Trauma is disruptive to love. We don't get to love in the way that we're supposed to love when we've been traumatized. We end up finding somebody that looks, you know, who fills in our need for misery loving company, or that speaks to something that we're familiar with, right? That's the thing about that. Be careful, the type that you think you are attracted to is not actually your wound seeking out familiar ground. We like to be comfortable. Change is uncomfortable. So if your wound is facing somebody who doesn't have that wound and they're healed, they've done the work to make sure that they're not holding on to that, and they get a hold of you and say, oh yeah, you got to heal that too. That's uncomfortable. A lot of times we run. We turn around from it and we go away because that doesn't feel good. Change doesn't feel good. And healing the heart chakra is hard work. The breakthrough is challenging. And also when you have these breakthroughs, not having somebody there to kind of guide you through what feels like a planetary shift can be devastating. It can be life-altering to have this sexual awakening, this heart opening, and then you're there by yourself realizing that you're a whole new person and how, like, navigating how to interact with folks from that. Whew, that's not an easy task. I remember when I first read about imprints in the luminous field, or the luminous energy field, and learned about imprints being made in your womb. Your mother's womb. So imagine you're going through life and you're holding on to these imprints throughout your whole life. You can't even point back to the trauma that happened. Therapy is not going to pull that up. You can't go and sit with somebody and say, you know, when I was 4, I remember I'm starting to see this image. This is stuff that we've carried in our luminous energy field. Things that are imprinted on us. And Alberto Villalda talks about how unhealed negative emotions and unresolved trauma causes these imprints. And they show up in the way that we move in life. In the way that we select the car that we drive or the path that we take. And the partners that we keep. The lovers that we decide. How our negative emotional imprint is pushing us to decide that. And so what happens is we pick unavailable. We pick folks that have gone through a trauma like ours. We pick people who have a familiar wound. We look alike. We bleed the same. We are reflections of our lovers. Unavailable people attract unavailable lovers. And this is not just like married folks. This is emotionally unavailable people. People who are unavailable for pleasure. We have not come, so many of us have not come to any agreement with ourselves that we're even worthy of pleasure. And so we find somebody who is equally unavailable for pleasure. And then we decide that we're going to fuck that person. And the sex is not even sex. It's, as Poo Poo Lala says, that we're just masturbating each other. We're not caring for each other. We're not healing each other. We're not even aware necessarily that healing is supposed to take place. We're physically unavailable. We are, I had a client recently and she was saying, oh, I'm not emotionally unavailable. I keep attracting the same emotionally unavailable men and I don't understand it. And sometimes it's not... Sometimes you're not emotionally unavailable, but you're still unavailable. And sometimes you're unavailable with your communication. That you haven't learned about what your needs are. You haven't sat and taken the time to be able to express your needs, to allow yourself to express your own needs and your own desires and your own availability. You don't speak to that clearly. You're not available in the sense of communication. And so therefore, you're attracting lovers who equally are not available to communicate. They can't communicate to their spouses that they want another partner. They can't communicate to themselves that the idea that they were born with and raised with about marriage and how it's supposed to look, that doesn't suit their needs. They can't communicate that to themselves and to their partners. And so they are living in a space where they are unavailable. They are unavailable to communicate, and communication is the foreground for trust. Trust is what relationships are built on. So you're unavailable. You're unavailable for all of that. And therefore, as a reflection of your lover, you are equally unavailable. So you'll go and you'll end up with somebody who can't communicate, who's unable to offer pleasure, and who's not there, who's not available emotionally, and you'll go and you'll sit and you'll lick your wounds together. They'll never heal. These wounds will stay wet. They'll stay irritable, on the verge of infection. You'll just get to lick them together in the same space. And so watch out for that. And get some work done. Like, go start doing the work. Don't be the girl that continues to cry healing. Don't, you know, recognize who you are in your relationships, in your desire to be in a relationship. A lot of you are like, 2019, I see it everywhere. Or how I'm being in a real relationship this year. Are you in a real relationship with yourself yet? Are you honoring your own needs yet? How are you going to create space to honor the needs of another if you're not able to even honor yours yet? And how can you demand that your future lover honors yours? How can you demand that your current lover honors yours when you don't honor your own space, your own boundaries, you haven't set any? That's what you have to start doing. Our Tantric Tuesday in January, the first one, is on it's on divisioning the divine, and it's a vision board type of party, but or type of workshop. But we're not cutting out of magazines. We're going to work through some of the shit that we have to unpack so that we can move into success in relationships, success in our sex, success in our work, in our business, and in our life, in our meditation, mind, body, spirit. How do we build success in those things? And how do we not end up at the end of 2019 looking up, licking our wounds with somebody who is also licking their wounds? Let's stop licking them. Let's allow them to dry, scab over, and heal. All right. Anyway, I've gone on enough about that. Tantra in 2019. I got a couple of podcast updates that are coming up. So just so you know, in 2019, we are going to be doing some roundtables. So in between, while I'll still continue with my regular podcast, I want to offer some little short conversations where I get to talk to other people in and around the community about their sex and about sexuality and about sex as it relates to spirituality. Specifically within the Black community. We also are moving into sponsorships. So I have my first sponsor. Yay. I can't wait. Our first podcast in January already has a sponsor. If you're interested in sponsoring, you should let me know, because we do have a pretty good listenership. So thank you, listeners. I would like to upgrade. I need to get some microphones so that when I have these roundtables, you hear us all very clearly. And I would like to, you know, have the opportunity to bring my assistant on for a few more hours to help me manage this. So by all means, please do come and sponsor. Sponsoring is really cheap. You can sponsor the Proho tip or the, full episode for $25 to $50. And I accept all major credit cards and PayPal. So there's that. All right. The Institute. So that's what we're calling it now. It's the Institute of the Atlanta Institute of Tantra and Divine Sexuality. It's the full legal name, but that's a whole mouthful. So we just say the Institute. And the Institute in 2019, we have a lot that's coming up. We have a big core of classes that are coming up to teach about sex, to teach about how to actually have better sex. Like, these are the classes, and they range in all types. We have sacred kink, we have a class on squirting, we have classes on masturbation, meditation, anal. So we have a wide variety of the classes, but all of our classes, I get this all the time, like, what does the fuck does this have to do with tantra and blah blah blah, and why is it so sexual? Tantra is a philosophy. It is not rooted in sexuality, but it does not separate your sexual self. You are a physical being as much as you are a spiritual being, as much as you are a mental being, an emotional being. These are all parts of who you are. We address all of them. We have fun classes about sex because we are also sexual beings. That's who we are. We reproduce and we want loving, thriving relationships. And a lot of what we're doing in life has been ruined by Hollywood and porn. And so we are trying to help to reset some of that. And we're taking a multifaceted approach. And I spend more time on the sex side because I am a sex worker. Duh. Okay. But we also are going to be doing a lot more. So please do sign up on our mailing list if you want more information on where we're going. We are going to Cuba again to have my class on intuition, on becoming a clairvoyant in Cuba. This will be the second one. We did one in 2018. I'm excited. 2019 is in March. We're also going to Costa Rica in April. I have my 10-week certification level one. If you're thinking about how you can access your healing power and to be able to earn a living, there's a lot of tantra programs out there that are there to teach you. I am here to help especially women of color, learn how to make a living healing yourself, healing others, and being a part of a healing community while also being able to eat. That's important stuff. So that's happening. And all of this really, to me, it's bigger than sexuality. It's bigger than spirituality. It's bigger than blackness. I am a black woman. I am a black sexual woman. I'm a pansexual. I identify as queer. I have all of these labels. I'm a tantrica. I'm a goddess. I'm a healer. All of these labels, but it's bigger than all of this because all of this is what makes it one big thing. So it transcends the ideas that we have about sex because sex is over here in a box. And it transcends the ideas that we have about healing or about massage or about sex education or meditation, because they're all in these little boxes. And here at the Institute, we've pulled all these boxes into one room, and we're accessing all of them. They're all equally important. It is as important that you meditate as it is that you orgasm, as it is that you eat. These are parts of you, and neglecting them, oh, to neglect them is to neglect a part of yourself. It's to deny yourself the experience of bliss and the experience of joy, love, creativity, all of this that flows in us that we're deserving of. So yeah, that's where we're going. That's Tantra in 2019. Please do check out the list of classes. 2019 is already up on the calendar, so a lot of the classes that are being taught, the entire first quarter is already listed on the website. We have, and we'll be adding more. We are taking this show on the road. As you know, I'm not going to ever seek accreditation for the Institute. I will. I don't believe in it. If you heard my previous podcast, it's just not. It doesn't speak to me. I'm not knocking any of the organizations out there that do. I think that they are great. They are speaking to a need for people to have documentation for healing. I'm speaking from an ancestral point of view, and I think that's a crock of shit. For me and my company, it's not something that I'm going to do. It's not something that I'm going to allow the organization to move towards. I'm not moving in a colonizer way. I'm not accepting colonizer mentality when it comes to healing work. In the same way that I get upset when I see that people have to get braiding hair regulated, or, you know, some of the crackdowns on some of the kitchens in California, especially in Southern California, where they're feeding ancestral healing food, but that has to be regulated. Like, it's just, to me, I'm not a libertarian. I am definitely socialist in my principles and the way that I move in life. I do, however, I'm not into the regulation of healing medicine. We see what that has done to the medical community. We see what it's done to yoga. I can't tell you how many people I know that are yoga that have no Indian roots at all. No, they are not connected to the subcontinent at all. And they are regulating yoga so that folks that come from the subcontinent can't teach in many facilities because they don't have a 200 or now a 500 hour RIT. I'm not about that life, and I'm not going to healers that are about that life. I'm not participating in it. I believe in tradition, and so folks that have a lineage from Reiki masters or Tibetan Tibetan schools of thought, I'm all for that. Western accreditation can suck a whole bag of dicks. So that's how I really feel. Anyway, I want to get to some of the questions that I have answered because I'm running long as per usual. So let's see. A couple of the questions that I get, and I want to start because my most common question is hi. It's not really a question, but the most common thing that shows up and gets deleted in my inbox is hi. I have a team of us that are over in the inbox. It's not just me. Hi, we need more than that. It's not a conversation point. It's like calling the doctor's office and just being like, hi, and pause. What do you want? Express yourself. So if you're one of those people, perhaps you are, perhaps you were in my inbox and you just said hi and you were waiting for a hi back. Because of the number of hi's that come into the inbox, we don't respond to them. So come back and ask the question. One of the questions that I get often also is about blackness. Like, is this just for black people or white people feel comfortable here? And it's interesting to me because I have been going to these events. I have been going to Tantra stuff for years and never, ever saw brown people in them. And it's not just Tantra. I lived in Hawaii for 12 years. I've gone to a great number of places where there were no black people or everyone was white. And it's interesting because I never thought to ask, can I be here? Is this okay? And it just speaks to privilege, like true, recognizable, holy shit, look, that's privilege. Because the reality is we have always centered whiteness and non-blackness in communities that so often that when something does center blackness, folks are scared, concerned, worried. And I appreciate the questions. I really do appreciate the question. I understand. And a lot of times it's coming from such a heartfelt place. It just a little eye-awakening or eye-opening for me and for others to realize that oftentimes when I talk about us creating spaces where black people can talk about our sexuality and something and be culturally cognizant, that is something that most folks take for granted when they go to a Tantra festival or some of these large events like the Bhakti festival, and there's no black teachers, there's no one that's speaking to you, and how intimidating that can be, how that doesn't really provide a space where we have access to healing. It's segregationist, and while there are benefits in segregation, it's just something to realize. Like, I see it so often, especially in sacred sex communities, yoga communities, where it's almost like people are walking around with a blindfold on the leadership. I get that you have a hard time allegedly finding black instructors, but I know that you're not speaking to any of us. There are so many that are far more knowledgeable than I am, far more knowledgeable. Black American instructors, practitioners, folks that have been doing this kind of work for years, and will pop, would love to come to pop in one of these festivals and teach if offered an invitation. And I see repeatedly the same faces or brand new faces, folks that just popped on the scene, just started studying sacred sexuality last week, all of a sudden at these events and at these conferences. And there's one common thread, and it's that they're not They're not dark brown. They're not black people. And so it's interesting as we start to, and so start to get the questions, you know, when I get questions about this, is that it's so rare to see a group of black people meditating, practicing yoga, that folks are like, or for studying sacred sexuality, that folks are literally concerned that they're not black. Like, can I come? Is this open to me? Yes, of course it's open. We are creating a space that centers blackness, but that does not mean that you can't be there, whoever you are. So please do know that. That's my answer to that question and my step off of the soapbox. How do you tell a black woman that you enjoy prostate play without her giving you the side eye? This one is funny for a couple reasons, but one, because because I get it. I get it. Right now, especially, there's this almost infatuation with trying to figure out who's gay and who's not. It's almost as if we don't, A, have the words to ask, and B, that we don't trust ourselves. A lot of folks that live on the DL, which is, you know, on the down low, that they're not really being asked. A lot of folks that are in the closet are in the closet not because they just haven't had a coming out, right? Then no one's asked them if they're bisexual. We don't talk about bisexuality in the black community, unless it's talking about two women. And so men have a hard time. I get it. It's challenging. Women are looking for a reason to say you're suspect. And as soon as the relationship goes awry, you're going to be in that space where now she's saying you're suspect and you have concerns around that. So the biggest thing to do is to release the judgment that you have around bisexuality and homosexuality. Realize that that's not who you are. If it's not who you are, if you're a heterosexual male and you would like prostate play or anal stimulation, which accesses pleasure, and you've told yourself that you are worthy of pleasure, you have the right to access your pleasure, and you have the right to access your pleasure with a partner, then you have to start releasing the stigma. Release the stigma around bisexuality for men first, because as long as you're holding on to that stigma, guess what? You are a reflection of your lover, and the lovers that are going to be attracted to you are going to hold on to that same stigma, and they won't be able to understand why you want to be pleasured in your ass, because they have a limited fucking thought process. So first, release your limited thought process. Realize that, you know, who you are, be okay with that, and then allow yourself to move from that space. That's the first step. And then you can tell your partner, once you've embraced yourself, who you are wholly, once you realize that there's no stigma or shame to be associated with bisexual men, you're just a heterosexual one, it's fine. You both get to exist, coexist side by side. You both get to experience sexual pleasure. And then you just move from that space. If you get with the woman that's giving you the side eye at that point, you already know to catch and release. That's a quick release party. I always tell everybody, we're not responsible for the feelings of others, but I'm also not responsible to train an adult, to decolonize the mind of an adult. So you don't have to feel like you have to do that as well. And I think that, you know, some of these flags that are flying, we ignore because we have those same flags flying. So you have to start doing the work on your own self to get to that point where you're with somebody who's not going to give you side eye. And you need to be able to express your desires. Open up that throat chakra. Get ready to explain to yourself what your desires are. Find out what they are. Do some pleasure mapping. Pleasure mapping with your lover will help. If you're already in the situation, like, I'm not throwing her out. I've been with my wife for 20 years. I just wanted to play with my ass a little bit. I get that too. Pleasure mapping is a great way to do it also, where you actually go through and you both explore each other's bodies. You leave no stone unturned. You explore every part of each other and you say yay or nay, thumbs up, thumbs down. A one, that's a one, that's a 10, that's a 5. I don't like that much, but I might be able to ride with it every now and then. Whatever that is, like, learn what your bodies do together if you're already together. And if you're not with someone, go learn your body now. Solo self pleasure mapping is really important as you start to, you should know what your pleasure is, right? I got my client that said that sex was the ultimate elective today. It's something that we ignore. We've ignored our sex and our sexuality long enough. We've pretended like it doesn't exist long enough. We know it does. We know we are designed for pleasure. Now go figure out what makes you feel good. And so that way you can tell your partner that this is what makes you feel good. And then say it with your chest. Okay, another question that I have is, what are some spiritual things for men? What is the male version of yoni eggs? Or i.e., what is the male version? So this is always a tricky question because men, my penis people, listen up. The male version of yoni eggs is semen retention. I know. It doesn't sound nearly as much fun. It is. Trust me. This does not mean celibacy. This does not mean abstinence. This means not nutting. Not ejaculating. The reason why is because you want to get to the point that you can be multi-orgasmic, right? You want to be to the point where you can be present for your lover and not chasing a nut, not holding back because you don't want to ejaculate. You want to train your body how to have sex without an ejaculatory response, how to ejaculate, how to experience orgasm and orgasmic bliss, and how to ride that wave. So it's important that that you realize that, you know, the beginning part of semen retention ain't fun. I know it ain't. I've worked on some folks, and I understand that semen retention is not where a lot of people want to go. It's where you need to go. And the sooner you realize that, hopefully the sooner that you realize it, the better. You don't want to wait until you lose your erection, which is what happens for a lot of people, is that you lose their ability to become erect because they focus solely on a reproductive biological function for their sexual pleasure. And that's probably not going to last you all your life. So yeah. Other questions. The next question: am I a male or a female? I'm a cisgendered woman. I was born woman. I am a femme, and I think that I hope that answered all the variations of what that question could have meant. I'm not sure why with an entire photo gallery of me online on my website that I got that one, but I did. Can we meet for coffee? I think, well, let me go back. My partner refers to me as the girl with the traps. So maybe that's why. Maybe somebody saw me with my tank top on. I have these, but the D cups are sometimes overshadowed by my trapezius development. And so I understand that. Maybe that's what it was. I'm not sure. I am woman, hear me roar. Can we meet for coffee? No. I get a lot of requests for coffee and dinner, and I'm partnered. And I love my partner, my main partner, my primary. I am not actively pursuing other partners at this time. I have a few on the line, and I'm investing all of my energy into those. I do realize that meeting for coffee or dinner is not always about a date, but I cannot. What you can do, though, if you want to meet me, is that we have wine and coffee at my event. So I teach every Tuesday, and I try to make sure I have time to talk to all of my students that are there. So please do, if you have a couple quick questions that you want a face-to-face answer, but you don't want to book a consultation, totally understand. Just come pop in one of my classes. I give away free classes all the time. If you're a member of Atlanta Institute of Tantra, then you also can attend classes for free. Just come on, pop in, get a glass of wine, and hang out. All right, I'm going to answer one last question, which is, how do you relax mentally enough to stop intrusive thoughts of the day during sex? And I like this question. just because it's so important for us to realize that. I think I saw a study that said, I gotta find it, but I think it said 80% or 90% of folks leave sex and go think about something else. It's kind of who we are, right? Sex is a meditation. And in meditation, you're going to have thoughts that come in and be right in the front instead of, you know, what you're trying to do. I'm meditating on the color green. I'm doing some heart chakra meditations. And here comes that I send out that Eventbrite email to the attendees of tomorrow's event. Oh, wait, shit. I'm focusing on green. The same thing happens when you're having sex. Try to work on presence. Work on being present for your lover and for yourself. Work on breath. Use the same techniques that you use in meditation. Having a focal point. That's why sex magic is so helpful, because it gives you something that you really have to focus on throughout your sex. You have to bring this desire into fruition. Whatever you're creating, you want that to be your focal point. You find a mantra, and that mantra becomes the rhythm of your sex. So that's the easiest answer, is to remind yourself that it's a meditation. Allow yourself to have those thoughts that come in. And, you know, realize the ones that don't serve you in that space, and tell them that you'll talk to them later. You'll still be there for them. They'll still be there for you. Give them space to exist and to get out the way, because you have an orgasm pending. Anyway, that's all I got for today. Thank you so much for tuning in all of 2018. And being a part of the Institute, being a part of my vision, listening to the voice that I used to hate before I started working at Ohana Broadcast in Hawaii. Thank you for listening, and thank you for coming to my events. I hope to see you at events in 2019. I hope that you have a wonderful, amazing new year filled with all of the desires that you can mentally kind of put together in your head. I hope you masturbate all them shits to your fruition. Fuck it into existence is the hashtag for 2019. So please do go out and fuck it into existence. Use the power of your manifestation in your orgasm to bring forth everything that you want in the new year and for the rest of your life. I am your host, Amina. Thank you for tuning in. Peace.